Thank you. Last week, at this time, we began our Paracletus Journeying Together series. And if you were here, or you've since listened to the talk online, you might remember, I hope you might remember, if there was any point in doing it, remember that Paracletus is a Greek word which is used frequently in the New Testament, and it means coming alongside others, coming alongside, being there for somebody to help them, to aid, to give assistance, support, to express love and care. George told me afterwards that even now in modern Greek, if you're in a Greek restaurant and you want the attention of the waiter, you call them parakalo. You say, you know, come alongside and help me. Parakalo. Derived from parakaleo, from which we get paraklesis. The key verse in this series is from 2 Corinthians 1. And that says, God comes alongside us when we go through hard times. And before you know it, he brings us alongside someone else who is going through hard times, so that we can be there for that person as God was there for us. Parakaleo appears four times in that one verse in the original Greek language. God comes alongside us. He brings us alongside others. God was there for us that we might be there for others. The same Greek word underneath those four different phrases. And I have to say, you know, I do already see this principle working here at St. Mary's. You know, we're not starting from a blank sheet here. Many of you are already doing this, exercising a ministry of paraklesis, of coming alongside others and caring for them. And I encourage you to keep going at that and to realize this is God working in you. This is God sharpening his image as a God who comes alongside us in your life. This is God's Spirit at work. We can get the feeling that, oh, I must engineer this, you know, I must be in the right place at the right time to draw alongside somebody. No, you know, this is not something we engineer. This is, you know, just, we're just called to show up and to be willing to be there for someone who's struggling if God puts them in front of us. Last week, we saw that paraklesis is, as a Greek concept that runs throughout the New Testament, is a little bit like a diamond that has got many different facets that throw light off in different directions. And last week, we looked at how it's not just coming alongside to care, it also gets often translated as encouraging one another. And this week, we're going to look at another facet of the diamond, moving on from a personal kind of core value of caring to a corporate culture of care, a paraklesis culture in our church, that it's not just individuals who do this, but we as a church have it, you know, stamped all the way through the stick of rock. You know, wherever you cut it, you see care and encouragement. Because there's much more than the call to care for one another as individuals. We are the body of Christ. And as such, we are called to live life just as Christ lived it. We're called to be a community with a culture of paraklesis, because that was how Jesus lived his life. Hebrews 10:25 says this, "Let us not give up meeting together, as some are in the habit of doing, but let us encourage one another, and all the more as you see the day approaching." That's referring to the day of Christ's return. "Let us encourage one another," says the writer. Although, of course, as you'll have guessed by now, it actually says in the Greek, "Let us parakaleo each other." the purpose of our meeting together is not just to worship God, it is also to encourage one another, to be there for one another, to exercise a paraclesis ministry among us. We're called to be a paraclesis community, a community that is there for one another. Sometimes in church we can rather too easily get focused on vision or on projects and actually neglect the people dimension, or at least it gets pushed down. I'm glad to say that as we slowly move towards becoming our own separate parish, that even though that's going on, our main focus this term is not on that restructuring, but it's on how we care for one another, how we relate to one another, learning to love one another as Christ loved us. Because being church is primarily about relationships. In the churches that received the letter to the Hebrews, some had already withdrawn. They'd walked away. They'd rejected the gospel. We frequently think of and refer to the New Testament church as the model for church. You know, this is the way it was meant to be. Well, even there, some people had given up. Some people had given up on being part of a fellowship, on going to church. They'd walked away. They'd turned their backs on Christ, at least on his body, the church. And I know that's a sorrow that touches many hearts today. In all likelihood, many of us here today know those who have turned their backs. And it hurts most, maybe, if it's our own children who've turned their backs and walked away from the faith. The writer of this letter exhorts those who remain to make sure nobody else walks away. Not to allow the church to suffer from a front door, back door syndrome. That's where we spend so much attention on welcoming people at the front door that we don't realise that others are drifting out the back door. The writer's effectively saying, you know, don't stop gathering together, but continue to come together, not just to hold services, but to come alongside to encourage one another, to support and help one another. That's a core purpose of us being church together. Because those who experience the love of Christ in that depth, expressed through his people in love and care, are much less likely to walk away. Because they will have understood the depth and the reality of God's love for them. So how can we grow this kind of a culture of care within St. Mary's? As I said before, we're not starting from a blank sheet. This is already something that I'm very pleased to say happens here at St. Mary's. And it works very well for some, but I'm conscious that it's not working so well for others. So we have work to do. We mustn't be complacent. Okay, if you are following in the Yellow Book, I'm going to skip a bit here. There's enough material, Sylvia's shaking her head, tut tut. There's enough material in today's sermon notes to keep us going for at least an hour. So Sylvia, unless you want to be sat there still at 12:15, I'm going to cut out a little bit. The next little section's got some Bible references. You may like to look those up at home and fill in the blanks as you see appropriate. Last week we were introduced to this concept of paraclesis through Jesus' story about the Good Samaritan. And today, as we read the story of Jesus feeding 5,000 people from 5 small loaves and 2 small fish, we're going to look at how Jesus did paraklesis. How he began to build a paraklesis culture amongst his disciples. And we'll explore what lies behind this act of coming alongside others to care for them, to provide for them, as Jesus fed them physically. What motivated that, and what will motivate and sustain us as we grow and develop as a caring community? And also, what binds us together as a paraklesis community? Because in this story, we'll see that a paraklesis culture has at its heart not just people who think it's a good idea and want to kind of care for one another, but it has at its heart the compassion of Jesus. We're on page 1009 of the Church Bibles, and we're on page 35 at the bottom in the Daily Guide, the yellow book. We could have actually chosen any of a number of miracles here. Not only the other occasions when Jesus fed thousands from a few loaves, maybe we could have looked at the raising of Lazarus or the widow of Nain's son. Maybe we could have looked at one of his many healings and seen the same principle at work. Jesus, God with us, models how we can be with others. Jesus, God, who is there for us, shows us how we can be there for others. And his compassion is at the heart of it. His love for the needy, for the broken, for the lost, is the lifeblood that doesn't just flow through his earthly body. It now flows through his corporate body. Corporate body, that's tautology, isn't it? Flows through his church, flows through us. It's the lifeblood of the church. Jesus' love for others. The story is significant in that this particular story is the only one that appears, the only miracle that appears in all four Gospels. And it shows us that how the disciples had the opportunity to care for others, but as so often, they actually failed and then got a lesson in how to do it right. It had been a very busy period for them. Back in verse 7 of the chapter, we read how Jesus had sent out the disciples out on mission, two by two. And I'm glad that Jane picked up in our prayers to intercede for Clive and Anne and Marion, who are on mission in Romania this week. Please do hold them in your prayers. And in verse 30, the disciples gather back around Jesus, having been on mission. They come back elated but exhausted, and no doubt disturbed to hear the news that John the Baptist has been put to death by Herod. They need some time with Jesus, time to debrief, time to recharge their batteries. But other folk keep pressing in on Jesus. And so Jesus says, verse 31, come with me by yourselves to a quiet place and get some rest. What an invitation. What an invitation. Come with me, says Jesus, to a quiet place and get some rest. I've got a week-long retreat coming up in a few weeks' time. And I'm just longing to be with Jesus in a quiet place and find rest and recuperation for my soul. So the disciples set off for this quiet place where they can be with Jesus, for the solitary place. But the impact of Jesus' ministry has been so great that the crowds don't want to let them just walk away. They anticipate where they're going, and they gate crash this little church retreat that Jesus had got planned. What would you feel? 5,000 people turn up at St Mary's on a Sunday morning? You might go whoopee. You might say, well, I can't park. Or you might say, but there's no seat for me. I don't know. Would that we had that to that problem. These disciples were not pleased by 5,000 others turning up at their retreat. It suggests in the course book that they hadn't adopted a culture of care, that rather the disciples suffered from what they call a compassion deficit disorder. I put a question mark behind that. Because I think that's being extremely hard on them. If I was there, I would have felt exactly the same. They've been away from base for some time. They've had a tough time. They've heard some very distressing news. And they need some rest. They need time apart with Jesus. I think, like many of us, rather than saying compassion deficit disorder, let's use a more modern phrase and say, yeah, maybe they suffered from compassion fatigue, as many of us do a lot of the time. But Jesus was different. Verse 34, it says, Jesus had compassion on them, had compassion on the crowd. Compassion feels something and does something. It's the love of Jesus in action. It's not passive. When we suffer from compassion fatigue, though, we feel nothing and therefore do nothing. The message, it's a paraphrase of the New Testament that uses some very good colloquial phrases to get across what Eugene Peterson thinks the New Testament saying. The Message paraphrase puts 1 John 3:17 like this. It says, if you see some brother or sister in need and have the means to do something about it, but turn a cold shoulder and do nothing, what happens to God's love? It disappears. And you made it disappear. Ouch! That verse induces some guilt, doesn't it? We can feel overwhelmed by a world of need around us. We live in an age of instant communication right across the globe, and we hear about so much need out there. TV, radio, internet, blogs, whatever. All daily bring to our attention people in need. And our capacity to care is limited. It's finite. We're human. And many of us run with that capacity exhausted. And having a series like we're running at the moment, calling on us to care more, and just gives us a sense of, oh my goodness, burden and failure. I can't do that. Listening to this, I don't feel compassion. I just feel a hopeless failure. I can't give any more. Don't give up yet. There's hope coming. That verse says it's not about our capacity to love. It's about God's love. It doesn't ask us to care for a whole world in need, but for our brother or sister here in church, who God puts right in front of us. God knows our limited capacity. He doesn't expect us to journey with everyone. Just one or two he puts right in front of you and makes it clear. Walk with them for a time. Because we're not called to fix the world's problems. We're not even called to fix that one or two people's problem. It's not the idea that we come alongside to fix them. It's that we come alongside to journey with them and show them some love. To journey through their problems, be there for them. Well, far from feeling compassionate, the disciples here felt nothing and did nothing. So after Jesus has preached for a while, verse 36, they say to Jesus, send them away. They've had what they came for. Push them away. But that wasn't Jesus' response to the crowd. Again, verse 34. When Jesus saw a large crowd, he had compassion on them because they were like sheep without a shepherd. When Jesus saw this crowd, he didn't see hungry people or problem people, needy people. He saw sheep without a shepherd. And it stirred his compassion, it stirred his love into action. A sheep without a shepherd, they'd had no sense of belonging. They'd had no particular sense of self-worth or value. A sheep without a shepherd, they were cut loose, they were just wandering aimlessly through life. So what does Jesus do for sheep without a shepherd? Firstly, he accepts them as they are. For that lack of sense of belonging that they had, Jesus said, just, you're welcome. You're welcome. You're accepted. Acceptance is at the core of belonging. If you're not accepted, you can't begin to feel that you belong. Love says, you belong as you are with all your needs. Love doesn't say, go and sort yourself out and come back when you're fixed and then you can belong. Jesus says, come to me as you are and let me deal with your pain. And the paraclesis culture in church provides a safe, accepting, non-rejecting atmosphere. No, we can't meet everyone's needs. But we can accept them. We can make sure that people feel welcome. And then Jesus validates them, it suggests here. You know, I said they have a little sense of self-worth or self-value. Sheep without a shepherd, who cares for us? And the disciples underlined that by rejecting the crowd. You know, saying, look, you've had what you came for, now just be off, enough. Go home, find your supper at home. They disapproved of them being there, basically. And I liked Alistair's word earlier on, tetchy. Jesus acted in a way that told this crowd, no, you are worthy. You're worthy of my time. You're worthy of my care. You're worthy of my love. We might not be the one to journey alongside somebody coming through pain, but by our body language, by our acceptance, by our words, are we saying, but you're valued? But you're valued, you're important. I might not have the capacity to walk with you, but God will call someone with you, alongside you. But I want you to know you are valued, you're important to me and you're important to God. And then Jesus reaches out to them. This flock that is just wandering aimlessly and each individual doing whatever they want, going whatever direction, which probably summarizes a lot of our society today. Whereas the disciples were dismissive, seeing them as a burden, Jesus invited them in, needs and all. And we can always say, come, come, let's journey together with Jesus. That's what we're doing in church. We are journeying together with Jesus. Compassion means being moved inwardly to get involved, feeling something that puts us that drives us to action, to come alongside others. But before we act, I would suggest we do need to ensure that we are motivated by compassion, that we're motivated by Jesus' love moving us within. That we're not motivated just by a sense of duty, by a sense of, this is what a good Christian should do, so hey, oh, here we go. Yes, I'll do it, whatever it is. If our paraklesis, our caring for others, doesn't come out of a sense of compassion that Jesus puts in us, then we're not doing it the way that Jesus did it. Now, I go as far as saying, if it's not from a sense of his compassion, then don't do it. You can't do it in his name if you're not doing it in his way. If you're not doing it out of his love, his compassion, his love moving to action. Whenever you read about Jesus journeying with others in the Gospels, you'll be reading that he's moved with compassion, moved to act. He came alongside others and he engaged with them, and miracles happened. Whether it was the widow of Nain, whose only son had just died, but Jesus raised him to life, the blind men in Jericho, a leper in Galilee, Lazarus at Bethany. On these occasions, the Bible doesn't say that Jesus felt a bit of compassion. It says he was moved with compassion, moved to act, and a miracle ensued. And it should be that compassion of Jesus that moves us, because if it isn't, then whatever we do is actually counterfeit and counterproductive. And it will induce a sense of guilt within us, because we're not doing it out of his love, and we're trying to do something we're not called to do. But we are called to have open hearts that are open to Jesus pouring his love in to us for somebody else that then moves us. We're called to be channels of his love, not a little thimbleful of our own love. And compassion brought about the miracle provision of the loaves and the fishes. And where Jesus shows compassion, miracles follow. But in this story, Jesus doesn't let his disciples off the hook. Yes, they're tired. Yes, they're at the end of their resources. But he doesn't let them off the hook. Of themselves, yeah, they're exhausted. They just need replenishment. But he doesn't say, okay, you're tired. Sit back and watch me do the business. He wants the disciples' involvement. Verse 37, he says, I'm glad Alistair highlighted this. I agree. This is the key bit. He says, you give them something to eat. How are they going to do that? He wants his disciples to come alongside and give people something to eat. He wants them to be paracletes, in the word we were using last week. But he sets about providing his disciples with the resources for doing it. And that's the important thing. It's as the disciples come to the end of their own capacity to care, the end of their own ability to do anything, to meet the need that's in front of them. It's when they come to the end of themselves that Jesus says, look to me to resource this. Look to me. I don't want you to do it. I want to do it, but I'm going to do it through you. You are going to be my hands and my feet in this world. I have the love, I have the power. Just do what I tell you. And it's as we yield to Jesus' compassion and power within us, as we place all that we have, 5 loaves, 2 small fish, as we place all that we have into his hands and let him work through us, that miracles happen. This story shows us quite a bit about the nature of Jesus' compassion. Firstly, it moves towards others. Compassion engages with the need that's there. Jesus tells his disciples, you do something about it. You draw alongside these people. You care for them. And then compassion accepts responsibility for others. I wish I put Jesus' compassion at the top of this, because, you know, we just must keep that in mind all the time. We talk about Jesus' love in us, not that little thimbleful of our own love. Jesus' compassion accepts responsibility for others. He refuses to send the crowds away hungry. When there is a need in front of us, we can choose whether to accept responsibility, whether to say, yes, God is calling me alongside this person, or whether to say, God must be calling someone else because it's not me. He's not pouring his compassion into my heart. To discern if that person in front of you is someone God is calling you to journey with. Not to feel guilty if you don't think it's right, but if you do think it's right, to accept responsibility, which is going to involve action. Compassion, Jesus' compassion, gives no excuses. The disciples gave excuses, and we well might, if we were in their shoes, if we hadn't already read the story, and we weren't thinking about Jesus' compassion flowing through us. Physically, they had inadequate resources, so little to feed so many, and yet Jesus was about to show that he is all that they need. He has all that they will require. Jesus' compassion in us moves us to place all that we have into his hands. He asks the disciples to tell him, what have you got? What have you got to meet this huge need? Often we're quick to talk about what we don't have, what we can't do. But Jesus says, what do you have? Give it to me. Wasn't much. Doesn't matter. What do you have? Give it to me. And if we're to be motivated by Christ's compassion, then we have to draw on Christ's resources. Draw on Christ's resources. The disciples bring the food to Jesus. See what happens. Alistair's taken away the 5 loaves, but let's take another one. It looks pretty meagre, even for, that much has got to do 1,000 people. That's about 12 times as many people as in here, so if I took a 12th off it, that much has got to do all of us. Are you going to be full at the end of that? Give me what you have, says Jesus. And so the disciples bring the little they have to Jesus. And common bread in the miracle hands of Jesus becomes miracle bread. But now that miracle bread is given by Jesus back into the hands of the disciples so that they can come alongside the crowd. Still look like very ordinary bread, but having passed through Jesus' hands, it's now precious. It's now going to feed a multitude. Jesus' compassion in us reaches out at the point, to the point of the felt need, and provides the bread. And, you know, that wouldn't satisfy you. That's more than you would get. It wouldn't satisfy you, but it says at the end, it says, I've lost the verse. Verse 42, they all ate and were satisfied. And the disciples picked up 12 baskets full Well, we're talking about a 12th, so that's now going to, the crumbs out of that are going to fill a basket. Is that right? No.
You can work out the maths. I can't at the moment.
That's what compassion does. A paraclesis culture that's relying on Jesus to resource us for others. Because Jesus' compassion in us demonstrates love coming alongside, not our little thimble full of love, but Jesus' overflowing love, flowing through his body, the church. What we mustn't do as a result of doing this course is feel like this is an additional burden that God is placing on us. I must do more. I must care more. You know, we can only be resourced for this horizontal ministry to others if we're drawing on Jesus' vertical supply to us. We mustn't do it in our own strength. We cannot do it in our own strength, can we? We know that we'll just burn out and we'll do nobody any good. So why bother? Let's feed and drink from the Lord. And it's wait for his compassion to flow through us. Wait until our hearts are moved by his love, knowing that he will resource it in a way that we could never resource it. Whatever your experience, whatever you've got, however little it is, however small it is, give it to Jesus and let him take it in his miracle-working hands. And then he'll give something very ordinary-looking but precious back into our hands to give to others. We long to see the miracle hand of God at work. Together, let's create a culture in which that can happen. A culture of love that comes alongside, not our little thimble full of love, but Christ's love through his body, which is now the church, us in this place.